What I can say is that uncertainty, unpredictability will continue to be the norm, at least for the foreseeable future. But I guess as an industry, change has always been a constant. So,
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we reimagine and redefine sales in a digital world. In this new series, we have absolutely scoured the world to bring you only the best of the very best. We will be working with each of the thought leaders to unpack all of their years of experience, their pearls of wisdom, and nuggets of gold into bite-sized chunks that will enable you to redefine your sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast. If we have not met before, my name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host of the Redefining Sales podcast. This week, I am so excited to bring to you a podcast episode with Shant Sogamonia, which I had to really learn to pronounce, and I hope I got that right. Shant, if you have not come across him before, is General Manager and Sales Director at Dell Technologies, and he runs the partner and ecosystem business within ANZ. I am really excited about this because whether you're in IT or not, I think there are some great lessons to learn in this discussion from Shant. He talks a lot in this conversation about how do you grow your channel. So for all of us, IT or not, we probably want to understand how we can build an epic channel strategy and get our channel partners behind us. So that is a really exciting part of our discussion. We do talk about, of course, 2023 trends. And just for context, this episode was recorded at the back end of last year of 2022, and we're now bringing it to you live, ready to kickstart your 2023. We also talk about innovation in this episode. How do you innovate within a large corporate? And we get some great lessons there. We talk about executing your strategy and some of the keys to execution as we kickstart our year. Of course, I ask my favorite questions around high performance sales and how do you build a high performance sales team? I also ask Shant about his career and some of the best advice and steps that he has had in his career, because I think he's had a fascinating career, and I'll share a little bit of his bio with you in just a moment. So there is so much to get out of this episode, and I'm very, very grateful to Shant for his time and coming on with us. Now, before we dive straight into the conversation, I'm actually going to share a little bit of snippet from Shant's bio just to do him absolute justice. So I mentioned now he's at Dell Technologies, General Manager and Sales Director, heading up the partner and ecosystems teams for ANZ. Prior to that, he has had roles across Asia Pacific and Japan, leading the sales team and channel as well. Before that, he was at VMware, another IT giant, and has also held management roles at the likes of Symantec, Veritas, Ingram Micro, and has an IT career spanning over 18 years. There is honestly just so much in this conversation. We also touch outside of IT and talk about when Shant actually did his MBA and some of what that brought to the table. So honestly, grab your pad, grab your pen, and get ready to listen to some of the pearls of wisdom that we got out of Shant's head. Enjoy. Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast. Today, we have got the incredible Shant Sogamonia. Did I pronounce it correctly that time?
Yes. Great job, Abby. Yeah, very well done.
We have just been practicing before coming on air. Welcome to the podcast, Shant. Great to have you on.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Abby.
So at this time of year, we're really starting to get into the groove of 2023, planning. Everyone's starting to think about the year ahead. It's obviously been an unpredictable couple years. Now, I'm not sure if you've got a crystal ball, but if you had a crystal ball, what do you think might be in store for the IT industry in 2023? Big question to start with, but I'd love to get your view.
Yeah, so thank you very much, and thank you very much for the opportunity today, Abby, to join you on the podcast. I wish I had a crystal ball. Go back, pick some lottery numbers and never have to work again. That would be the reason why I would use a crystal ball, but I don't have a crystal ball. What I can say is that uncertainty, unpredictability will continue to be the norm, at least for the foreseeable future. But I guess as an industry, change has always been a constant. So, you know, besides the unpredictability of world politics and supply chains and all of those things that really isn't in our control. I guess we are lucky that we work in an industry that constantly evolves and changes, and therefore it is an unpredictable industry to work in some instances. And that change can be fast and slow. And you know, Abby, you've worked in the industry for a long time as well, so it's something that I'm sure that you have seen. In my discussion with partners and customers, and in a lot of the analyst briefings that I'm reading, IT spend will continue, right? It's not going to stop because of the high inflation rates and the financial risk we're seeing in the markets, etc. IT spend will continue. The IT spend has to continue because what we saw during COVID was a heavy reliance on IT to continue to have the schools running, companies running, governments running, etc. And so therefore, customers are continuing on their digital transformation journeys. What I will say is where customers spend their IT budgets will differ and will change. Are they going through refresh cycles? Maybe, maybe not. Are they going investment into upgrading or their infrastructural cloud strategies? Maybe, maybe not. Are they focused on data and applications? Maybe, maybe not. Are they focused on security? I'm going to probably suggest everyone's going to be focused on security. But that's probably a crystal ball use that I could take, right, to go back or forward. Security is probably going to be a focus, which it is going to be a focus in the response. But IT spend will continue and every customer's IT priorities and spend will differ. So my only crystal ball action would be know your customer. Know where their business is at, where their digital transformation journey is at, where their spend are, where their priorities are, because that's the best way that you can service, work, collaborate to help them achieve those goals.
Yeah. I like the security crystal ball, actually. I wish I had shares in some really good cyber companies a few months ago as well. That would have been a good one. The other good crystal ball would have been last year and the year before having shares in Zoom. That would have also been classic.
Correct, yeah. But I would suggest security still is, you haven't, and I'm not your broker, Abby, I don't want to make any financial suggestions, but I'm going to suggest that security problem isn't going away anytime soon. We are going to see an increasing amount. And if you read any analysts, I'm not expert, so don't take my expert. I'm not an expert in security, but inevitably we are going to see a continued investment from customers, and especially what we've seen recently in Australia with those hacks and data breaches, etc.
Yeah, it's so high profile. You know, at the time of recording this, it's been in the papers pretty much every single day. So there is absolutely no escaping it. So I'd agree with that. That's a pretty safe bet.
So, yeah, I think not just every single day, but the because they're always there. If you go and you read the stats, I think there's thousands of registrations of cases on a weekly, daily basis, whatever those numbers are, and they're Australia specifically. But the magnitude, like the millions of customers, so it's no longer just a little hack. It's this is millions of customer data breaches. So the size of them are pretty amazing as well.
Yeah, actually, that's a very, very, very good point. I don't think I've seen as many as high profile and quick succession as each other as what we've seen the last few weeks, for sure. Yeah. So I want to talk to you about, as we're in sort of 2023 planning mode, you know, for you, I always find it fascinating because when you're looking at planning for the next quarter or the next year, there's always so many, I know from my time in corporate, there's so many conflicting priorities and there's so much that you've got to do within a certain amount of time and budget and resources. So, you know, when you're thinking about your next quarter or your next year, how do you approach that? Do you have a bit of, you know, your own methodology that you adopt that helps you back? Okay, there's 20,000 things that I need to do and 20,000 things that the business would like me to do. But actually, here's the right growth strategies that if I had to narrow the field to these couple, these are the ones that I think actually have the highest potential for us. Like, do you have a process that you go through that might help others in this phase?
Yeah. That's a really good question, and something as a leader I've been trying to develop over the years as I mature, I guess is the word, that I'm looking for from a leadership perspective, because the critical few are the ones that are the most. You've got to prioritize those critical few. But working in any organization, but also a big organization, you get hundreds of things thrown at you at any one time. And so therefore, as a leader, you need to mask your team of these 100 things, but you also need to prioritize the ones that are going to have the most meaningful impact on your business. There is an approach that I do take, and that's both short-term and long-term goals as a business and a team. And so, we set ourselves 3-year goals as a team, and we regularly review that as a team, and with that, not only as a leadership team, but with the wider sales organization. We're very transparent. But within that 3-year plan, we have some big bets. They're the critical few. They're the critical few that are really going to move the needle, whether it's capturing addressable market opportunity that we may not have, going into new market segments, going in mindsets, going into new partner segments or new acquisition partners or competitive partners, whatever they may be, or customer segments with new partners as well. So really defining what your long-term goals are as a team. That's my first approach. Have a 3-year plan and take your team on that journey with you. Then identify the critical few. So which are the ones that you're going to place a bet on that are going to really move the needle to get you to your big bet goal, your 3-year big bet goal. The last area of my planning process is around then resourcing it properly. Because what I found in my experience is that if you're going to change something, if you're going to have a significant impact on your business with a change that is going to get you, that's going to grow your business in multitudes, then you've got to invest in it appropriately as well. My experience is if you give it to someone as a part-time job, as a pet project, part-time job, side project, all those things that we've all been given in our careers, it really becomes that. It becomes a pet project, it becomes a side project. It never gets the focus, the execution, and the outcome that you want. And so, therefore, that is always really important, making sure that you're investing and resourcing it adequately to get to the goal that you want in the long term.
Yeah, that is so interesting. Ironically, I spent about an hour on the phone to my HR person this morning around resources. And it's the constant battle trying to get that right, you know, resourcing appropriately, but not over-resourcing and right people. It's a constant battle. Do you find your 3-year strategy, it has to be have a certain level of flexibility in it, in that, you know, the past couple of years have thrown us massive curveballs that no one saw coming. And so do you find that you have to kind of deviate a little bit along the way, or for you it's more the 3-year strategy stays the same, it's the same North Star, but just perhaps the road to get there has changed a little bit and deviated?
It predominantly stays the same. Right, but you bring things in and out. What I find with those big bets, capturing addressable market, going after new partner segments, going after new customer segments, you've already identified where your white space is. Well, you should have already identified where your white space is, and so that shouldn't change. So it's going after a partner segment, a customer segment, a new solution segment, right? So that's the white space, because you don't have the share, it's your new market, whatever it may be. How you do it, you can tweak how you get there. And that's the approach that you need to take. Because our market and our industry is constantly evolving. And so therefore, you've got to evolve with it as well. But your goal always has to be the same. I want to go after that customer segment. I want to go after that partner segment. I want to go after that solution segment. So that's the white space, that's the goal. How you get there, you can tweak, but what I would suggest is don't tweak too fast and too often, because sometimes you've just got to let things ride out. Execute, watch, are you making progress? Are you making progress fast enough? Should you tweak? You know, so assess it at all times. And that's the approach that I take. And therefore, having the right, BMS system to, you know, business management system to, or on these big bets, is it critical as well? Because it allows you to assess how you're performing, are you capturing share, are you gaining new customers, whatever that goal, Abby, might be. But allow you to tweak where required. But sometimes you've just got to watch. You've got to sit back and watch and let it execute, and then take action if required.
Yeah, I love that. That is a really, really fantastic answer. So I want to tap into one of your superpowers. Obviously, your role is heavily focusing on the channel and growing the channel. Now, a lot of our audience is in IT, but actually some aren't, but they still may have a channel strategy. So I'm kind of curious to understand, for those that are looking at developing their channel model, what do you think are the non-negotiables for a successful channel model?
Yeah, so I've been really lucky that I've always worked in the partner, what I'm going to call a partner ecosystem, Abby, whether it was in sales in my early stage of my career, whether it was sales, selling to customers with partners, or it's been the last, you know, 10, 15 years where I've worked in partner roles and partner leadership roles. What I'll say is, I'll answer the question in two areas. One, what would I recommend to people that are working out what their channel strategy should look like and what are the non-negotiables? Let me start with, you know, what does it look like? I don't call it a channel, I call it a partner ecosystem sometimes. However, what I do refer to it is what is your route to market decision? And there may be different decisions that you make. So what you need to decide as a business is, I've got a product, I've got a solution, and I've got customers who want to buy it or consume it. What is the optimal route to market for you to take your products or solutions to your customers? What kind of skills do you need? So firstly, it's how do you get to as many customers as you can? What's your route to market strategy? What kind of skills do you need to be able to deliver your product? It may be as simple as fulfillment services or skills. It may be in our world as complicated as architecture and engineering skills and capabilities. So understand your products, how your customer consumes them, and then make a decision around what your routes to market should be. And I say what your routes to market should be because you might have multiple routes to market. Vendors usually do. They usually have a direct route to market or a direct engine. They have a partner strategy as well, which would include resellers, distributors, integrators, service providers, you know, partners that buy your solutions and provide it as a service. So, you know, there are multiple ways that your product or your solutions can be consumed by customers. So understand how that's done, and then determine what your route to market strategy looks like as well. The non-negotiables. That's really, really important. And for me, be transparent and predictable in your go-to-market with your partner. So what you say is what you do, because a partner business is a business. It's someone's business. It's a corporation. They make an investment. They place a bet. They're going to sell your product. They're going to sell your solution to a customer. So therefore, being honest and transparent in how you go to market is absolutely critical. And then invest as well. Invest is so important, right? Build those capabilities. You know, leverage them as your extension of your sales force, as your extension of you in the marketplace, and therefore invest in the training, invest in the resources, invest in the capabilities with that partner. So they're probably the two non-negotiables: trust and transparency in your approach to the market, as well as the investment that you make with whichever route to market you choose to take.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because one of my favorite expressions is common sense isn't common practice. And it sounds like common sense, but I know, you know, I did a stint a long time ago where I was with IBM and they put us on Common into the channel. And suddenly you see all the different vendors turning up, all the different vendors' approaches. And actually, you're right. Sometimes the strategy was changing on a dime, or sometimes you could just feel the tension in the relationship and there wasn't the trust there. Sometimes there, you know, some vendors wanted the earth, but there wasn't the investment. So some of those sort of couple points you've made there, it actually is almost getting those fundamentals solid and consistently firing so that there's that continued relationship.
Yeah. Consistency is important. And that's what they're looking, that's what an ecosystem of partners looks for from you as a vendor. They're looking for that consistency, that transparency, that trust. They may not always like the decisions you made, but be consistent, right? And then invest in them, invest with them in their businesses and their go-to-market.
So I want to change us on a little bit to talk about innovation. I know myself from having come from a large corporate, it can be quite hard to innovate within a large corporate or, you know, innovate within a business. So recently you got an ARN award for innovation. So absolute congratulations on that. I think it was the winner of Personal Innovation and Management Excellence, which is, you know, massive, massive achievement. So I wanted to sort of understand, how do you innovate within a large corporate?
Yeah, so firstly, Abby, thank you very much. Humbled and excited to be to receive that award a few weeks back. It was a good evening, a celebration as well. Innovation in a large corporation can be both easy and difficult. So I'm sure everyone understands the difficult part, but let me go through some of those details and I'll touch on the easy part. Innovation and change in a large organization requires the right buy-in. It requires the right investment, the right resourcing, where in a company that you've already got investments and resources in the business doing other things. And so therefore, it's really important to take the virtual team in a large organization on the journey with you. You know, why are we innovating or changing the approach or the project that we're taking on, Abby? Why are we doing it? Why is it different? Why will it accelerate our growth, our customer adoption, our profitability, whatever it may be that you're driving with that particular innovation? Making sure that they understand the change, they understand the innovation, take them on their journey, their role as well. So making sure that you bring the virtual group together in their role on that change. Because in a lot of instances, in large organizations, different stakeholders, different priorities, they own the investment, and therefore you've got to bring everyone together. Because in my experience, once you do that, once you have the right strategy, all the right people on board, then the easy job comes. The easy job is that actually large organizations can usually invest and execute pretty well. Mm. And because they've got they're large, they've got the people, they've got the scale, they've got the market, they've got the install base, they've got all the things that work for them. And so therefore, once you get the strategy, you get all the right stakeholders involved in the virtual team, as I referred to before, you start to execute and everyone starts firing. In my instance, the easy part is actually the execution. With whichever change or drive or innovation that you may be driving. So that just gives you an aspect of the approach that I've taken. And we've seen great successes by doing that. By the way, we've seen some pretty bad failures as well, Abby. So don't be scared to fail sometimes. Learn from your failures and celebrate those as well, because, you know, you gave it a go and it failed, and you know, that's okay, right? Because, you know, you've got to innovate, you've got to change, especially in, I'll go back to comments I made a few times, especially in an industry like ours that's constantly innovating itself, constantly disrupting itself. You know, you've got the big vendors, you've got the smaller startups, and, you know, they always change. Those that were big 10 years ago aren't necessarily the ones that are big today.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting actually, because most people struggle with the execution. And so it's kind of interesting flipping that on its head, being the easy part, because you can actually get some of the investment and manpower behind it to make
Correct.
The execution the easy part. So it's actually the opposite to what a lot of businesses experience.
Yeah, in my experience, you're right. Execution is actually, in a big organization, the execution, once you've got everyone on board and you've made the right investment and the resources, is actually the easy part. It's getting to that point in where all the hard work is at least in a large organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to our 2023 theme, I want to look at sort of sales in 2023 and get back out your crystal ball with your lotto. You know, we have seen a bit of an interesting time for sales. We've seen obviously everyone work through COVID remote selling. We now have got everyone in hybrid models selling. There has been various changes. We are seeing more buyers wanting to have a digital path as well. So I'm really, really curious to get your take on, you know, what do you see being important for sales in 2023?
Yeah, so I'll start by saying, Abby, that it's time for everyone to be able to get out there and engage with their customers face-to-face. You know, this morning I was in the office, met with one of our partners and came home really quickly to have this conversation with you and then back out there to have a QBR with another partner this afternoon in the city. So I'm really excited that we're back and able to engage with people and customers and partners face to face. It's really good to be back out in the field, I should say. However, I guess one of the great things that COVID did bring to us was we all found a new working rhythm. And I'm going to suggest, Abby, we're more productive as a result. Because, you know, in the old day, you'd wake up in the morning, you put your suit on, or you put your pants on, or your dress on, and you'd go to the office because that was what was sort of expected of you. COVID allowed you to do work from wherever you wanted to, mostly unfortunately from home for long periods of time, but it allowed you to say that, you know, I will choose where I work from. I will choose how I'm going to engage with my customers and vice versa customers with us as well. So it allowed us to create this new rhythm of work, which is really great, right? And it also changed the customers' behaviours and their buying patterns and all of those things. However, coming back to your questions of sales, I still believe the fundamentals of sales haven't changed. And the fundamentals for me, you know, there's a few key fundamentals that will always be there. Understanding your market, your industry that you as a sales rep cover. So understanding your patch, understanding your customers, understanding your industry is really, really important. Understanding your customers. You know, in the technology space, how are they using technology? What is their technology spend? What are their project priorities? What is the overall business priorities and how is IT helping them achieve those business priorities as well? So you as a salesperson, understanding your customer, that is an absolute fundamental. Second area is around relationships. Relationships are key and will continue to be key. Knowing who the right stakeholders are within your customers, knowing who you work with in your customers are very, very important. How they choose to buy, consume your technology, that's going to always change. As a service, through a service you provide, through a service on a marketplace somewhere that your product may be listed, it's always going to evolve how they consume and buy your product. Through a retailer, through a partner, whatever it may be. But having that relationship, understanding your customers, those fundamentals don't change. There's a couple of other things as a salesperson that doesn't change in this new world as well. Trust, doing what you say, comes back to that relationship piece. You know, people want to engage with people that are transparent, are trustworthy, and understand their business, but also are easy to work with as well. The final area is around running your business. You know, that doesn't change either. You know, in my world, SFDC hygiene, pipeline development, closing deals, whatever that run the business rhythm in your own in your own business as a salesperson, in your own little business is critical, right? But it comes back to those are the fundamentals that don't change. How a customer consumes, how you close that deal or how it's transacted, that's always going to change and evolve as well. So I'm going to say COVID was a good thing from a work-life balance, creating your own rhythm. Fundamentals of sales don't change, and customers will constantly evolve how they consume technology and products.
It's interesting you say about the productivity piece. I found, you know, myself questioning, I got invited next week to do something and it's for 1 hour. It'll probably take me an hour to get there, an hour to do the meeting, and then an hour to get back. So really half day out. And I found myself questioning, does this need to be face-to-face? Can it be virtual? Or actually, is it one of those ones where actually, even if it was 30 minutes, it's worth going to face-to-face just to meet, you know, face-to-face, build that relationship, build that rapport. And I find myself now questioning more what is the appropriate format, whereas pre-COVID, it just would have been a face-to-face and I wouldn't have thought twice about taking half a day out and being traveling and on the road. I think it's more
correct.
Decision now, what's the right format?
Yeah, and actually in the old days, pre-COVID days,
pre-COVID.
Yeah, that's right. So pre-COVID, you'd also be reluctant to say, hey, can we have a Zoom meeting? Because you didn't know the response you'd get, because in the old days, as I said before, you get up in the morning, you'd put your dress or your pants on and you'd go out, right? Where actually you're right. We've gone through a period where we've shown that it works. You can work in this virtual world. And therefore, you find your own rhythm and you make those decisions. And people are okay. Abby, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to come out and do that meeting face-to-face. Do you mind if we do it virtually? And next time we'll do it face-to-face. And you're okay. You're more comfortable to ask those questions as opposed to the reluctance pre-COVID.
Yeah, no, I agree with that entirely. So I want to take you to leadership. Obviously, you're in a senior leadership role and you've had a mountain of experience in leadership. We have quite a few people who follow us and connect with us on the podcast who might be as a sales professional now, as an individual contributor, and they might be considering how they progress their career and they go into leadership roles. If you had to give your sort of best advice to them, what would that be of how individuals can progress into senior leadership roles?
Yeah, so, you know, maybe I'll answer the question by explaining to you, I do some mentoring and we have a number of different grads going through our programs. And so I spend some time and maybe I'll share with you my leadership traits that I focus on in my leadership development and that I've had for a number of years. They will differ by individual. So you've got to have your own and you've got to be able to tell your own story. And that's maybe a recommendation. You know, find your story and tell your own story. But these are the ones that I focus on. Reputation and trust being the first. In my experience, and you're going to have people that listen to the podcast that are early in their career, the trust and reputation follows you through your career. And so therefore, be proud of that, right? Be proud of having a reputable brand, a reputable and trustworthy brand in the marketplace, because that is really important. People will come back to you. People will engage with you constantly throughout your career. People will look out for you, and even if you haven't seen them for many years, and they will speak, they will recommend you to others because of that reputation and that trust that you build and you take with you through your career. Learn from the world around you as well. Learn constantly. You'll succeed, you'll fail. You've got to learn from both of those as well. It's not all about success and learning from those, but it's also about just as much about learning from your failures as well. So learn constantly and adapt. That's that second trait. So learning and adapt. Because as I've said numerous times during our conversation today, Abby, our industry constantly evolves. And so therefore you've constantly got to evolve and learn and adapt as well to the changing market dynamics, to the changing industry, to the vendor that you're working at, to the partner you're working with, to the customer solution that you're trying to deliver as well. So, you know, constant learning and being adaptable is critical. The last area is around be aspirational as well. Maybe that's the first one. If you're going to be, if anything you do, just be aspirational, because actually the aspiration rubs off on others as well, and those people around you. When you have a big goal, when you have aspirations of where you want to take your team, where you want to take yourself, it actually rubs off on the people around you as well. And so they go on that journey with you. So, you know, there are a couple of leadership traits that I focus on as a leader that are important to me.
And it's funny you say about reputation following you. I, you know, when I moved from the UK to Australia, I never could have imagined the amount of people who you bump into who have done the same. My first ever manager in IBM when I was like 21 or something like that is now out here in Australia, and we now work with them. So it's unbelievable how, you know, 15 years plus I'm crossing paths the other side of the world with same people. Reputation definitely follows you, and you can't even go any further in the world away and it still follows you.
And that's a good thing, because you own that, right? Yeah. You own that reputation. It's part of your story. You build the chapters of that story, yeah, and that reputation that follows you. So you're absolutely correct. So 20 years later, you run into each other and do business together.
So I want to finish off with, I've got sort of two quick fire ones for you. One is best investment that you've ever made in your development.
So great question, Abby. There are a lot of things during my career that were investments in myself, I will say. There's a couple that are highlights for me. I did an MBA. I did an MBA quite young. That was pretty exciting, and I learned a lot from that. The second area is I recently took on an executive coach. And that was great, and really changed my mind. Not changed my mindset, opened my mind to some areas of development. But what I will say, the biggest investment that I made in my development was at the age of 28, not too young, but young, I took an APJ role on for the first time. And I think if I think about my career, how my career has panned out, the 10 years I spent in an APJ role, although I'd by that stage almost completed my MBA and I had some great experience in sales and a little bit in management, going and working in different cultures, different countries, working really hard, really long, really hard, but also really smart, taught me a lot. And I think that was probably the biggest investment that I made at such a young age, which allowed me to be in the position that I am today. There are some other things that I've shared those before, but that APJ role, taking that at such a young age, learning so much and so quickly, and then just constantly learning about doing business in different markets, building teams in different markets, building networks, recruiting distributors, et cetera, all those things in different countries. That was probably the biggest investment that I made that for me personally has resulted in the greatest return.
I love that. And I agree, because I moved to Australia when I was 28. So there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
So what I want to leave you with is I do have to do a shout out for the Dell channel, because we do have quite a few listeners who I do know are Dell partners. So I'll give you a Dell shout out. If there's any parting comments or thoughts for any of your lovely Dell channel who are listening, what would you leave them with as we're heading into 2023?
Yeah, so to the Dell partner ecosystem, thank you very much for everything you do every day. Working with the Dell team, working with our customers to deliver outcomes to them. Some parting words. I guess it goes back to the beginning, Abby. Our industry is constantly evolving. Our customers, what they're doing with IT, their digital transformation journeys, are evolving. What I will say, more than ever, what we are seeing is that every customer project or outcome is now needs an ecosystem of partners to deliver. And it's not the traditional partners that we're all used to working with. It's integrators, it's distributors, it's the hyperscalers, it's the ISVs, it's data center colo providers, it's the marketplaces that the hyperscalers have. It's all changing constantly. And so my parting words as part of this conversation today is, understand how the market's changing, how your customer is adopting these changes themselves, how they are taking this on their digital transformation journey, and then how do you change your business and partner to be able to deliver those outcomes to those customers? Because in some instances, you may choose not to build that capability, or you may choose not to change your own business, but partner to be able to do that. And therefore, as I come back to before, it's taking a partner because in the evolution of a partner ecosystem to be able to deliver the outcome, especially right now, Abby, where we're seeing a talent war, the requirement for so much talent, the cost involved with that, especially in a market like an expensive market like Australia and New Zealand. I sort of finish with that as well. Digital transformation, it's happening. It's happened. COVID accelerated that. Customers are all at different stages of their digital transformation journey. Understand where they're at, what help they need. They need a lot of help. And how we as vendors and you as partners can help our customers on their digital transformation or their own business transformation journeys.
Thank you, Sean. I think that was an awesome way to set us up for 2023 between your crystal ball, your planning strategies, your what is going to be hot in sales, growing your career in leadership. You have given us so many nuggets of gold. We will pop your LinkedIn link in the show notes so that if anyone who's listening who's not already connected to you wants to do so, they can connect. But thank you so much for sharing with us today. That's been fantastic.
Thanks very much, Abby. And yeah, please do reach out on LinkedIn. More than happy to accept your connection request, as well as have a look at some of the content that I put up there as well sometimes. So it'd be great. Abby, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to receive the inside scoop on what is working right now in our highest performing campaigns, and likewise, what are the pitfalls to avoid directly to your inbox, then simply visit insidescoop.salesredefined.com.au to make sure that you receive our fortnightly newsletter with everything that you need to know to stay ahead of the pack directly to your inbox. And finally, before you leave us, don't forget to subscribe to Redefining Sales Podcast so that you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed it, we would really, really appreciate it if you could leave us a comment or perhaps share it with a friend or colleague who you know would enjoy it. We'll see you next time.